All right, we'll try and move this into lunch now. Katie bailed and left me to clean whatever's up here. By the way, just a little spiritual hint I picked up from Clint Hodges years ago. He made a suggestion to me. We'd talk back and forth and share whatever was going on. And he said, you know, I've had great impact. Every morning I just get a post-it note and I write down four things that I'm not going to be willing to do today to have a better relationship with God. Not. And it's interesting because I just leave that at home and I come back at the end of the day and see where my troubles come from. And he says what it happens, it takes the shit happens out of your day. I made a reservation this morning to have these troubles here, you know. Things like this day I wrote, I'm not willing to stop predicting the future. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're going to do. I know what, you know, I know. All correlated to that, I'm not willing to stop reading minds. I want to figure out what's going on there. I'm absolutely not willing to be just average. And, you know, it's hard to maintain unity and be in a group if you've got to be above average all the time. In a group of all of everybody's above average. And I'm not willing to live a life that's not that doesn't have a lot of distraction in it. I get to go shopping. I get to go do this. I get to do that. Maybe even a little sex stuff thrown in there. It's all distraction. Distraction. You know, I mean. The sex, when it doesn't have anything at all to do with love, is just about, I want to change my mood. It's a great tool properly used, but it's one of those, it's kind of like bomb disposal. You know, if you don't do it right, it can blow up on you and stuff. Katie asked that I share this piece of fear inventory I wrote. Geez, this is probably almost 20 years old now. And the background of this was that my friend Don Pritz was to be the featured banquet speaker at this big deal, black tile deal in Palm Springs. And kind of the place was the who's who of AA in terms of people that were there. And Don had some things come up, so he couldn't do it, so he tossed me into it. You know. And what happened was I was going to a speaker meeting, local speaker meeting, and a guy I know and like was the speaker. And I came away from that meeting, oh, God, what's wrong with Keith? God, he stunk the place up. I mean, you know, he usually gives a much better talk than that. I wonder what's wrong with Keith. And by the time I got home, I realized the problem wasn't Keith. Keith's talk had been fine. It was that I was full of fear about giving this talk in Palm Springs. So I got down and wrote the inventory here, and sometimes if I'm in the mood, I name them, and this is named Palm Springs Trauma. Yes, and our custom is to write a little prayer across the top, and it's, Dear Father, please give me the power to do your will and the strength and wisdom to do so with compassion. Well, first fear, I'm going to give a boring talk in Palm Springs. Why do I have this? Well, I'm full of pride, ego, and self-centeredness. I want to impress people rather than truly be of help and service. I want to show them how good I am rather than how great God and AA are. What's the better way? Trust God. I must turn to God and give the talk He wants me to give. Next, I'm going to go blank and forget everything I know. Well, that might be a blessing, but I've got this because I want to manage my life, and I'm clearly not trusting God. Trust God. Let Him clear my mind of the clutter of self-serving thinking so I can speak the truth. Here's this. I'll be an embarrassment to the people who recommended me. God, Don, where did you get that guy? You know? And he's my hero and my mentor. I don't want to embarrass him. I not only want to manage my life, but I want to manage the feelings of others. I really want to do this for my comfort, not theirs. Again, selfishness and self-centered. Answer, trust God, remember why I'm doing this, to be a service. And then we're drilling down further. I don't really belong with this in crowd. I'm not who and what they think I am. Mind reading. Once again, I'm more concerned with being what I fancy others think I should be rather than what God wants me to be. Trust God. The truth is, I've always received an abundance of love. Per St. Francis, I must seek to love rather than be loved. You know, I had an Al-Anon friend point out one time, what you really are is an approval sucker. You know, you sit there trying to suck approval out of everybody around you. And then, of course, you'd think after all this, I'd be happy if they canceled the conference. No, the next fear is I'll never be asked to do it again. I got this. I want to play God. I want to decide how I will serve God. I'd be willing to take the place of somebody able to more effectively carry our message just to serve my own selfish end. Ooh, don't like that. Trust God. Perhaps I can serve God even as a fool. In any case, it is for God to determine how I shall serve Him. I only get to decide if I will be of service, not how I will be of service. And then finally, people will praise me out of kindness and pity. Don't you always go, thank you. Oh, that was a great time. Thank you. Yeah. I'm acting from self-interest rather than out of sincere desire to serve God and others. And who the hell do I think I am to judge the kindness of others and reject it? I mean, that takes some cojones, you know, or it's lack of something here anyway. Trust God. I will always suffer when I turn to sources other than God for my sense of worth and well-being. And at this time, Clint had suggested that I might want to flip the script here and look at the old ideas reflected in that inventory. And the ones that I identified at the time, God's waiting to get me, just waiting for me to stumble a little bit and bang. God doesn't care about my happiness. And God will make a fool out of me. And then I get to ask myself, is that what I truly believe about God? And what I truly believe at that time, God doesn't think comparatively. He's not comparing me and you all the time. realizing the fact God has never punished me. I can, you know, if I jump off a building, God's not punishing me when I hit the ground. It's just gravity. Why did God do this to me? Well, sorry, honey, he didn't. I'm a child of God, and he loves me absolutely and unconditionally. It's only my behavior that troubles him at times. God won't make a fool of me, but I will make a fool of myself by trying to pretend to be what I'm not. And then God wants my happiness, not pleasure, happiness, even more than I do. And finally, God will know what will make me happy even more than I do. And so that's what a practical day-to-day application of that fear inventory looks like for me. And then one of our really underused inventories is our conduct inventory. And because it's just sex, it's just about all those people, it's just, you know. And I did that a long time ago. I put all the girlfriends on it, it's a wonderful way, particularly, has anybody here got some resentment that they've written about a couple of times and it seems to still pop up? Yeah, well, these are a great set of questions. Here, I put my mother in the sex inventory, and I trust me, she and I did not relate in that way. But the questions are extremely useful here. At this time, my mother suffered from Alzheimer's disease. That's a lie. I suffered from her Alzheimer's disease. She was fine with it. But I had to look at what my behavior was. I've got two brothers and a sister also involved in here, and so here's the deal. Father, please set aside my prejudice so I can see the truth. Mother, I've selfishly avoided Mom as her Alzheimer's has progressed. I've called in frequently and done minimal visiting. I've dishonestly assumed that her condition prevents her from realizing what my behavior is, that I can just show up from time to time and she won't know the difference. See, I'm not her favorite kid anymore. I'm that nice young man from Indianapolis that comes to visit her. She doesn't seem to recognize my name. I've inconsiderately let my brothers and sister do most of the heavy lifting. They live closer. Some of that's practical, but also some of that's avoidance on my part. I've only done what I've been specifically asked to do and given support to the others. I haven't gone the extra mile. Now we're getting down to it here. I've emotionally abandoned Mom for my own comfort, and in order to avoid the feelings of powerlessness and grief and fear I have about her condition. I mentally deal with her as she was, not as she is. When I allow myself to reflect on this, it's as if I've buried her alive. And then, what should I do instead? I need to honestly face my emotions about her condition. I must stop playing God. She's alive, and I must maintain a relationship with her as if she's fully cognizant, because she may be from time to time, and I don't know which times those will be. And that allowed me to straighten things out and participate there. And as it turned out, Mom's disease here actually was kind of like her last act of parenting. It brought all of us kids. We'd scattered a bit. We had our own careers and our own relationships, marriages, and whatnot. And so we liked each other well enough, but we'd just gone different directions. And taking care of Mom and taking care of the stuff around that brought us all back together there. And so it wasn't what I thought it was. And I needed to straighten out and change my behavior, or there could have been resentments on my siblings' part. So, and that's flipped into today, because my sister is now having some problems. She's not an alcoholic or anything, but she's, one of my brothers went to visit her, and she's turned out to be a hoarder. And went by and oh, let's go out to lunch, you know. Wouldn't let anybody in the house, and we finally figured it out. So we're in the process of getting her situation taken care of. And because of we have the spiritual muscle memory from taking care of Mom, that we know how to do it this time, and we're cooperating together and don't have to wait for something bad to happen in order to do what we need to do. So these inventories, we write our initial ones, but these are permanently useful tools here. And I'm still getting I worked as a corporate trainee in Louisville, where I live now, in the 1970s, and now, since I've moved back all these years later, as I drive around town, I go, oh, I remember that apartment. Oh, I remember that bar. Some things that I honestly had slipped my memory are coming back to me. So I'm having another chance to re-examine some things while I'm there. And unfortunately, there aren't names attached to them. There's just mainly disgusting behavior. So, thanks.
Well, back to the third step. I tell you, Mike's inventories are worth listening to over and over and over on these CDs, because, or tapes, or whatever it comes out on, because you have to study this stuff. It's not just that you listen to it, you heard it, and you go do it. I mean, this is all really study material, and Mark Houston was the one who said, the way you study is you read a paragraph and ask yourself what each line means to you. And then reread the paragraph and ask yourself, and you have to do that over and over and over again. Sometimes we pick up spiritual literature and we just read it. And it was never designed for that. It's designed to be studied, because you got to get it in here. And in order to get it in here, you got to be feeling it. And I listened to his fear inventory, the one I'm assuming you read while I went and changed my clothes. And I loved that one. I listened to it over and over, because remember I told you the fear inventory never touched me in the big book. I didn't even understand what the point was, and they didn't lay it out in columns, and I didn't understand it, and I don't want to do it, and I don't have fear. And that's how we dismiss stuff. I mean, we really do, and we go, and I'm okay with that. And so I listened to it over and over and over every time I'd get on the trail, and it was like, wow, this is amazing what he can get. But what happens is when you do it, you get that enlightened. Not that good at it, enlightened about yourself, right? This is all an internal job between me and God. We were talking about the actor, and this will tie into it, but I want to get through this pretty quickly, too. It says, you know, if only my arrangements would stay put. If everyone would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everyone, including myself, would be happy. Life would be wonderful. That is an absolute delusional lie. How many times have you gotten your way and it still wasn't it? Almost every time. And that's what's so shocking about this. But when I'm in it, that never crosses the horizon. I'm just driven, right? This drivenness is what I like to look at. We call it Katie-topia, right? If everyone would just do as I wish, because I'm just a good person at doing this. And remember, Charlie and I are the yin and the yang. So, you know, my sponsor said one time, after 8,000 pieces of inventory and 10-step calls and conduct inventory, I love looking at that conduct. How am I showing up as a wife? How am I showing up as a neighbor, as a sponsor, a sponsee, the whole nine yards? And Charlie and I do things very differently in the car. You know, I personally feel like I'm held hostage when I'm with him. And, you know, it's we're going to go from point A to point B, but with Charlie, we're going to stop 9 times on the way. And then we can't really both you be on the phone. But for some reason, in my eyes, I think he's on the phone all the time. So you can see we have a problem. And Marty said, you know, why don't you guys just take 2 cars? Oh, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. I said, Marty, first of all, he won't go for it. And secondly, it's just not a good idea. Well, after many arguments in the vehicle, you know, many, and it's like, hey, I got to run by Sam's. Well, of course you do. Of course you do. Supposed to be home 20 minutes ago. And, you know, and this is what Charlie does. And then, you know, then you get the dust up. You know, welcome to relationship. Welcome to marriage. And, so now we take separate cars. At first it was awkward, and now we both like it. Charlie likes it, and I like it. And we went down to South Texas dove hunting and last week, and it's a 4-hour drive. And the guys down there at the lodge are like, so let me get this straight. You guys come in 2 different cars? And it's like, oh, yeah. And they just can't wrap their brain around it. Well, I'm the first one there, first of all. Let's make that point. And it was so funny because the guide comes, meets me at the street, right? Because, you know, we got some trouble down in South Texas. And so, you know, he's going to meet me at the gate before you get on anybody's property down there. You got to be very careful. And so he meets me at the gate, and I'd never met him before. I said, is anybody here? And he goes, no, you're the first one. I said, we need to make sure everyone knows that. And so then the other guys come in because they flew in, and then Charlie showed up. And the truth of the matter is Charlie had a ball coming down. He stopped by Camping World. He stopped. He picked up his firearm. He did, you know, and he was running about 20 minutes late. We had to wait on him just a little bit. But all that stuff makes me crazy. Well, I don't mind waiting 20 minutes on Charlie as long as I'm not in the car with him. So very important. So we go in 2 different vehicles. And it. Well, I did. I had, yeah, we were out of town for 10 days in a cellular hole at a shooting competition, and I had 71 messages to return. So it's like, you know, one at a time, baby. But so that's kind of one of the things that sometimes this stuff seems ridiculous, and I'm not willing to try it until the pain gets great enough. And then it says, in trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. Now, here's the toolkit of self-will. See, I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, modest, even self-sacrificing. Right? If not me, who? You know? And then if I don't get my way, mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. What usually happens? Show doesn't come off very well. This is where we live, at least me and my sponsees. We live in the third step. Now, Mike sees things a little bit differently than I see things in this arena, but this is the way I do it. I think we get, Mark used to say, it doesn't matter what donkey you ride to the top of the mountain as long as you get to the top of the mountain. However you see fit to get to where you're going. And so when you call me, you're calling me with the 10th step. I don't get really close to my sponsees. I find that very dangerous for me. All of a sudden, if we become too good of friends, you know, I don't like the boy you're dating. I don't like the way you're wearing your clothes. I don't like the way you're talking around people. And I just lose perspective. And it's me. It's not you. It's me. And so I like to keep a little bit of a wedge between that. But when you call, so we're not going to call and just visit because I really don't have time for that. I've got my friends. I got my posse of people that I got. But I don't have time for Charlie's current situation. We're pretty challenged with some stuff going on. And the first thing somebody, a sponsor, will say is, how's it going? I'm not answering that question 29 times today. I'm just not going to do it. So I kindly say, look, you know what? I just don't want to talk about it. Oh, okay. And if I do, then I will. But I don't want to, I am the one kind of setting the parameters in this relationship. So when you call me, I like to also deal a lot with voicemail because I am very difficult to catch. And if you call me and say, hey, Katie, it's Mary, can you call me back? You will never return a call. And if you text me, forget it. That ain't happening. I am not of that generation. You know, I've had people text me, can you sponsor me? I don't even want to call you back. If you really think a position like that can be done via text, now I will call you back and you will hear my opinion on what you did. But, you know, I just don't do that. I'm sorry. I just think texting is we're missing. I want to hear your emotion. This is all about spiritual growth, you know? Could you imagine if God just texted you some input? Let it go. So when they call me, they are to leave the problem on my phone. You got 3 minutes to leave the problem on my phone. So when I call you back, then I can tell you what I heard, where I saw you made decisions based on self, you know, yada, 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 yada. We can knock out so much via voicemail. And I don't care if you leave me 3 messages if it takes that long. Now, if you do that every time, you're too wordy. You can already see that you're too much in your head with, I got to be sure I get this exactly right so she can see my point of view, right? So it says, what usually happens, show doesn't come off very well. First conversation, 10th step. Oh, my God, I'm so pissed off at my boss, right? Show didn't come off very well. She begins to think life doesn't treat her right. There's the self-pity. He decides to exert himself more. Here's where I'm driven by the fear. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious. There's that toolkit of self-will, right? What am I going to do? And this is happening like this. Still the play doesn't suit me. I mean, how many times have you gone back in to try to rebring something up and it gets even worse, right? Because that's called self-reliance. That's what we're trying to help you understand and take a spiritual approach on something. Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, he's sure others are more to blame. Right? And that's where Mike said he used to say my part. That if I could erase anything out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would get rid of the term my part. There is no part. It's your faults and your mistakes. Do you see the difference? It's like black and white. You know, it's not my part because my part's always going to be about that big. And you know, Charlie's got a way bigger part than I do. But the truth of the matter is I've made decisions based on self. So it says he becomes angry. Indignant and self-pity. Angry, column 2, indignant, column 3, and self-pity, column 4. That's where the inventory is getting ready to happen. And I'm not a fan of check marks in the, you know, self-esteem, pride, ambition, securities. I think you miss a huge piece of the old ideas. The old ideas are in your third. Now, this is going to be on recording, whatever we record these days, CD, tape, thumb drive, I'm sure it'll, got writing in the sky, I don't know. I know it won't be an 8-track, but one of the things that I like is when you're talking about this inventory process, you have to understand that we're getting down to causes and conditions. All of this is preparing me for the inventory so that I can see those decisions based on self. High-end problems, I don't care. I hope you have high-end problems. A problem to a drunk is a problem, period. If the pool boy put too much chlorine in your pool, that's a problem. You don't go down to the home group and raise your hand and share it, but you darn sure call your sponsor. And that's what that 10-step call is all about. Because, see, when that thing, rat holes, squirrel cages, that's the bondage of self. That's what the bondage of self looks like, is when this won't shut up. And how do we take care of this? Well, that's 10 and 11. But if it's 10 and 11, I got to understand what the inventory process is talking about. So those old ideas are in a third column of a 4-column resentment inventory. They're in whatever, however you do a fear inventory. I don't care if it's a paragraph, if it's 3 columns, 4 columns, however you see the book is laying it out, then it's in the self-reliance part. Is your old ideas. And then the conduct inventory, it's all over it. I mean, the conduct inventory really is the fourth column of a resentment inventory. It's all you. Okay. Yeah, that's the best one. That's why getting them to that is the best. But the other thing that's kind of tricky here is when we're talking about these inventories and you're trying to wake up to where I've made decisions based on self, after you've written enough inventory on it, the pause when agitated or doubtful, you know how you'll hear people in a meeting say, I paused today when I was agitated. That's all self-reliance. I can tell by the way they say it, it's self-reliance. And don't get me wrong, I used to do it myself. So I'm telling you, this is because I was that person, right? I can see the me in you. But today, that pause is a spiritual gift. And you literally get 2 seconds. Don't say that. Don't come at that person. Don't straighten them out. Don't go there. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Or you get the nudge that says, hey, smile at that person over there. You know, you're like, okay. Right? I mean, it's unbelievable. God's always communicating with us, but we're blocked. And if you haven't heard it, I get it. I didn't hear it for a long, long time. And it says, what's his basic trouble? Is he really not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? See, the terminology in our book, which is very different than today's terminology, is that we have to be able to use the terminology, if you ask me, what's in the book, and explain it. Right? So self-seeking, I'm going to be a self-seeker. I'm going to go out there and get my way. I'm going to manipulate. It was funny because people like to use terminology like, I'm just a people pleaser, you know, just a people pleaser. I'm like, well, why don't you bring in all the people and let's see how pleased they are to be in your world. And what you are is an approval sucker. This is all Lorenz's lines. These are all stolen from my buddy Lorenz. So the other one is I'm a perfectionist. No, you're a pain in the ass is what you are. Let's call it what it is, man. But see, we want to use this terminology to look good, right? Because, you know, this is just who I am. And so that's what it's talking about. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think, we as the first 100 who wrote the book, is the root of my troubles. Do you believe that? If you don't, we need to stop right there with you. And some people nod their head like they do, but they don't even know how they're selfish and self-centered. I thought it was stingy and conceited. Come to find out, it is self-consumed. You know, and when I'm self-consumed, then I react. I was voted, I know this is going to impress you, most likable 4 years in a row in high school. I mean, just saying, you know. And so when I read that part of the book, I thought, well, that's not me, but Charlie was my best friend. He clearly was self-centered. I mean, you could see it all over him. I remember having these thoughts. See, once you start waking up, you remember these thoughts. They just come back to you. And, oh, my God, you couldn't have convinced me I was selfish and self-centered because I thought it was stingy and conceited. I take a word prejudice. I thought it meant black or white. I really did. I thought it was that simple. I had no idea that I prejudge everything. We are a judgmental machine. This thing is constantly spitting it out. So now, this is how quickly this works. The root of our troubles, we're driven by 100 forms of fear. It could have said 1,000 forms of fear. Self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows. They retaliate, seeming without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, I made a decision based on me. So once again, if you're listening to a piece of inventory or a 10th step, just a verbal 10th step, you have to realize if all we're going to talk about is how the other person reacted and how rude that was, well, they should never have done that. I had a situation where I won't use any names, but this particular individual called somebody I admired. I don't sponsor them anymore. Somebody I admired, and the person that I admired gave them the input that, well, that wasn't a very kind thing that they did to you. I'm like, dude, did you hear the front story? I mean, do you know what she did in order to piss that individual off? And so you see what I mean? If you don't take it back, we can't see where you made that decision that pissed off these people. We are a pissed off machine out there. I mean, we're like just boom, 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 boom. We're just pissing the world off, right? And then we think we can do one of these. Hope that didn't upset you. I mean, when was the last time you had somebody that you are close to mad at you? This morning? Yeah, it's not hard to figure it out. And it's not that we're bad people. But let me tell you, we can go off the rails pretty quickly. And a lot of people in AA, they don't have relationships with their family. They don't have relationships with their siblings. I did it all the way. Codependency group therapy, my dad was the problem. I made a lame amends to him, and that's all she wrote. Man, it was because of him. Blame, 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 blame. And so when we're looking at this, when we're driven by these 100 forms of fear, we kick into delusion. The mind, and when we get into 10 and 11, what the law of substitution and the law of subconscious activity will blow you away. This sucker doesn't forget anything. It just... And it just spits out. It's like Mike said, you drive by somewhere, you go, oh, God. Or some sponsee calls you with the 10th step, and you realize, oh, my God, I did the same thing about 7 years ago. You see, God's always opening these doors. It says, is he not really a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? I love that line because the victim means I'm tricked or duped by my own delusional mind, not denial. We are not in denial. We are in delusion, much more serious situation. And the word delusion, I love it, is an impression that is firmly maintained despite being contradicted by what is accepted as reality. Typically a symptom of a mental disorder. I'm proud of that one, personally. And then it says to wrest satisfaction, which means seize by force, right? Wrestle it to the ground. Satisfaction is being right and happiness. Remember when people say, would you rather be right or happy? I mean, come on, guys. I want to be right. If happiness comes, lucky me, you know? But, I mean, oh, I can give you the right answer. But I got to tell you guys, I'll just kill both of us if you give me a lame answer like that. It's like, what are you talking about? And then it goes into, isn't it evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? See, have you ever been in a situation where you see somebody at work trying to do and get something, and you're like, oh, I see this action. Oh, I know what they're after, right? Well, see, we're doing it too. We just don't see it when we're doing it because we've got a motive. You take that kind motive, right? And if everyone would do as I wish, that delusion, you filter it through, the worst I'm ever going to get is an A-. You know, if I'm taking score here, it's going to be a problem. And don't his actions make each of them wish to retaliate and snatch everything they can out of this show? Oh, let me tell you something. The inventory process makes columns 3 and 4 make column 2 a lie. But I'm believing it's the truth no matter what. I had a situation, and this is just such an old story, but it's a good one. No, I'm going to change it. I'm coming with a different story. My son-in-law, Charlie and I and my grandson were at dinner, and my son-in-law had something with his throat that when he drank wine, it closed up, or, you know, it was a dangerous situation. And we're all sitting there. He's in town, and he starts kind of clearing his throat. I said, Dev, you okay? And he goes... And he stands up, and I looked at Charlie like, oh, we might have to head to the hospital. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to take my grandson, and there was the claw machine where you get the toy with the claw. I am so good at that machine. I mean, oh, my God, I will get a toy. Yeah, 'cause I'm good at it. And so I take Ryder in there, and I'm you know, putting the bucks in, and I'm going after the toy. And when I see them coming out, because it's go time. We gotta probably take him over to the hospital. Devin comes walking up to me, and I am telling you, I am this far from getting that toy. And I'm like this, and I go, and I, you know, I don't let the grandkids do it. Hey, stand back. What? You know. And Devin goes, Katie, we gotta go. And I go, can you give me a minute? Can you give me a minute? Never even crossed my mind that he was scared to death. Because I'm getting this toy. I don't even see it. But this gets even better. When we get in the car, I walked up to him and I said, oh my God, Dev, that was so inconsiderate. I'm so sorry. And I left it at that. I didn't beg him to forgive me. See, you know how I'd still be making it about me, right? And it was one of those things that you just go, oh my God. You know, I just was, you know, kind motive, take the grandson out. Don't let him, you know, witness, get scared. And then I get preoccupied in the claw machine. And there you go. I mean, that's how delusional we are. I also got Invisalign one time. You know, I had a tooth taking a left. That's a problem. And can't be having that. And so I go in to get Invisalign, and I'd never been in an orthodontist office as a patient. You know, you got 15 chairs, and everybody's under the age of 12. And, you know, then you got me. And the dentist was a super nice guy, but he was really fit. And he was talking about, you know, he rides bikes, and we're in this conversation. And I mean, I am just all about it, right? He and I are just talking. And all these people come in, you know, that are working there in, and I'm thinking it's because I'm so fascinating. That's what it is. They just want to hear about this world that we live in, right? And then all of a sudden I realize, you know, it's time. I have to leave you guys. Go back to your work. And your rainbow sunshine is going to have to leave right now. And so I go walking out to my car, and I had my food. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take my food back in and eat it there. Because when you have Invisalign, you got to, you know, floss. You got to clean them. You got to do all this stuff. And when I come back in, the whole place is closed, lights out. And I thought, oh my God, all those people were coming in that worked there going, get her out of here. Jesus, could somebody shut her up, right? I would never have seen that. Every time I went in, I'd be going, I'm back. Unbelievable. So when I came back the next time, I said, hey, last time I clearly wore my welcome out. And the girl was like, and I said, I will pay attention to that, and I won't do that again. I'm sorry. Because who would have seen that? I did not see that happening. There's so much in life that we are so blinded to. See, I can't see a picture when I'm in it. That's why I have to have a second set of eyes on me. Then there's story stealing. Oh, my God. Charlie's family is off the flipping chain with story stealing. And story stealing is not, I'm going to top your story. I'm not interested in your story. Mine is much more fascinating. And if I can talk, then I'm good. So all of a sudden, somebody talks about, you know, they got a two-year-old. Oh, when my kids were two, I la 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 la. And I never get to hear their story. And Charlie's family really is off the chain. I'm not talking mildly. They are off the chain with it. And so I told Charlie, there's a second part of this where you got your hand up. Right? So you're talking to the person and you can tell they're ready to speak. It's almost like they got their hand up. They're just waiting for me to take a breath and then they jump in. And you'd be shocked in Alcoholics Anonymous how off the chain this is. And so to become an active listener is difficult. It really is. See, we're not really interested in what you're even saying. I'd rather be talking. And so to be an active listener, you have to work at it. And so how do you work at it? Ask them three questions. You know, if they say, we're going to Puerto Rico, wow, when? Is it the whole family going? What part of Puerto Rico are you going to? You know, really just, you know, kind of like a news reporter. Really get involved in it. Instead of going, I've been to Puerto Rico. Who gives a shit? And so I got to tell you, I did this at a big book workshop. I said, ask three questions, and it was in Arizona. I'll never forget it. And this big old guy comes running up to me at the break, and he goes, what are the three questions? And I go, well, Dodo, what is the conversation? What do you think? You got three pet? I'm going to Puerto Rico. You ever been married before? I mean, I swear to God, you just want to go, oh, my God. And then we said it in Toronto. You remember that in Toronto? And only about half the group chuckled because they're out there going, what are the three questions? You see how we miss this mark. It's really incredible. Story stealing's off the chain. Just try it and find out how interesting it is to find out about somebody else. It really is. It's very interesting. I like to be an active listener. I love to talk, don't get me wrong, but I am a very active listener. And in the inventory process, very important. And the last one is when self-reliance, how does that show up for me in my mind? Say, some people are scared to walk into a room of a bunch of people. You know, they have that. That is not my problem. But some people do have that. So right when they get to the door, they go, come on, Katie, you know you can do this. Just walk in there and face it. See, no God at all. It's Katie, it's self-reliance. I'm leaning on me. There was no God in there because that's not my default setting until we make it your default setting. Remember, this is all about working towards this goal of a consciousness of the Creator. getting that still, quiet voice. So all of a sudden you get to the door and watch how it slowly happens. It's a little bit like smoke in a room. All of a sudden you go, I call it Father God, give me the strength to do this. I know I can. Right? Something like that. Instead of, come on, Katie, you can do this. So the words, if I had to change the words of today, like I said, I am not a fan of codependent, not a fan of it at all. It's a dangerous word, if you ask me. And I'm not willing to have an argument about that. It's my experience. I don't like it. I'm the actor running the whole show. I'm constantly self-seeking. Do I want your approval? Absolutely. Everybody does. I love it when people say, oh, I don't need that. Oh, sure, sure. If everyone would do as I wish. Manipulative and controlling is the self-seeking. You know, alcoholics are so manipulative. We're self-seekers. This is terminology we will probably never change. So we have to understand it. Expectations are ambitions, right? What are your ambitions? What do you want to have happen? What do you need to have happen? And then belief systems in the book, it's old ideas, prejudice, and values. You cannot fool yourself about values. That's what the inventory's about. And I will be honest with you. I have lines in the sand and as a sponsor. And trust me, it's not because I'm better or anything than that. But if in this day and age, like I said, the sex, if you ask me, is off the chain. And it's weird and it's out there. And it's a problem. If we have a whole part of our book that says, now more about sex, everyone has a problem, right, is what the book is saying. And so when you come to me and I'm sponsoring you and you're married, everything's great and groovy, we're doing the work, and then all of a sudden you tell me you're going to bring a third party in. I can't do it. I can't sponsor you. You can get 100 other people in AA to sponsor you. I cannot sponsor you in that. It's so far outside my value system that that's the line in the sand that I have with you. I'm not going to try to work with that for you to see. I want you to realize that I just can't do that. And I get to be that person. You know what I mean? If you realize, I mean, I'm not over there going, I'll sponsor them and them, but not them. It's not that. It's we formed a relationship, and you changed the terms of the deal. I didn't know I needed to lay that one down for you, but I'm not doing it. I mean, it's just, I can't even wrap my brain around stepping that far outside of my value system. I can't figure it out. So it says, so our troubles are basically of our own making, right? This foundation, basically of our own making. So if I want to be free, the problem has got to be me, which is different than what the 12 and 12 is saying. This is a little controversial, once again, not really wanting to get into an argument about this, but a spiritual axiom. I'm almost always in, you know, whatever that spiritual axiom thing is. But if you read the next three paragraphs, it's talking about forgiveness, that we have to forgive the people. Well, trust me, most of my inventory is me going back and asking for forgiveness. See, I like my troubles are of my own making. Where did I make that decision based on self? They arise out of ourself, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self will run riot, comma, what's the next line? Though he usually doesn't think so. So if you're out there going, you know, I just don't think I'm as self-centered as Katie is. I mean, it's such a drunk trap everywhere. Above everything. Mark used to say that to Charlie a lot. Mark sponsored Charlie. We alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness, right? The word rid, or it kills us. The word rid means to be set free, not like taking the garbage out and then it's gone. Knowledge or awareness are very important. I thought they were the finish line. I thought now that I'm aware of how I show up, I can fix it. Wow, was I off the mark there, right? I got to see what's driving me. I got to get down to the old ideas. And remember, old ideas are not always bad. You know, some people have old ideas like I'm fat, I'll never be skinny, I'm always going to be single. You know, those are old ideas, yeah. But this is another one. I'm a good mother, but I'm really a better mother than you are. I'm a good AA. I'm really a better AA than you are. Right? See, that's an old idea, because that baby will drive you. And it's all kind of cloaked behind that, look at me, I'm this person. I'm almost done here. Hang in there, guys. Now here's the, we just finished what do we mean. Now we're in the what do? We have to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. Remember, the steps tell us how to take them, why to take them, and when to take them. First of all, we have to quit playing God. Why? It didn't work. It does not work. I'm telling you, I did not realize that because I did pretty good, I thought. Next, we decide. Now, here's the decision that we're talking about. The prayer is the reiteration of that decision, that God was going to be. Now, listen to these roles that are assigned. God is going to be the director. Remember, I'm the actor running the whole show. God is the director. So God is now going to be the overseer of Katie. Talk about a tough agreement to make. It's kind of scary because you're like, what's he going to do? Mike read that beautiful thing about God. You know, people think that God causes all this stuff. I'm like, man, that is an old idea that is not going to serve you. I don't know why bad stuff happens. I think it's self-reliance, self-will. You know what I mean? I mean, I go shoot my neighbor next door. I guarantee God didn't have a thing to do with that. It was not his plan. And because self-reliance is tough, there are some ugly people out in the world. And we aren't them, but... So God's going to be the director. He is the principal. We are his agents. And agents, I love the definition of it, is empowered to act on his behalf. Oh, that makes Bob be very upset when I say that. He goes, I don't like that. I go, well, I'll file that under, who cares? Because the truth of the matter is if I'm empowered to act upon him, I am the vessel to help you get connected. Am I going to screw up with some direction I give you? Absolutely. I'm a human being. Do I screw up a lot? No, I don't. I don't because a lot of what I do has been guided by the undeniable voice. If there's a sponsee, now let's see if this is a far reach for you guys, that bugs the crap out of you. Everybody get someone quickly? Four or five on that list, right? That they bug the crap out of you. I've done inventory on them. I'm very clear, yada, yada, yada. I have to be spiritually fit before I call them back, or I'm going to not be growing in understanding and effectiveness. I'm going to be really direct, and I'm not going to give them what they need because I know that. Why? Because I did it 8,000 times when I snatched that phone up. Anytime I snatch a phone up, I do a quick reply on a text, I'm going to regret it because it says, remember, the victor only seems to win at war, although our moments of triumph are short-lived. When we sincerely took such a position, right, all sorts of remarkable things followed, right? Quit playing God is not easy. God does not make too hard a terms for those who seek him, right? We had a new employer. Is that your experience? If it's not, oh my gosh, put your seatbelt on, man. This thing is going to open up in a way you can't imagine. It is a slow process. That's just the nature of it, but it is worth the ride. Being all-powerful, he provided what Katie needed if we keep close to him and perform his work well. Now, here's the tricky thing. Remember I said God does not make too hard of terms for those who seek him? These are the terms of the deal. When you get into a marriage, this is what I tell people all the time. When you get into a marriage and you say your vows, that's what I'm sticking with. So if we grow apart, that wasn't in your vows. Get in there and do the work to try to bring this thing back together. You've had three kids. Now you got all this. And what we do is we take the easier, softer way. These are the terms of the marriage. Right? Charlie and I have very strong terms of our marriage, right? No physical violence, no infidelity. And honestly, I got to draw a line in the sand if you relapse. I've got no patience for that. I mean, I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. And when Joe relapsed, he was out of the house in 6 hours. I don't have 1 ounce of Al-Anon in me as far as that goes. and it was heartbreaking, really was. But I just don't, I'm not going to sit there, and don't get me wrong, God will bring me to a place, if I didn't have those lines in my sand, he would bring me to a place that I can't even imagine, but I'm too self-centered to do that harder work. You know what I mean? I would like to just kind of die relaxed. Don't want to do, and, oh, I knew it. I knew that was going to spark something from Mike. Yes, sir. Uh-huh, here it comes.
What do you mean when you say you're asking God's help?
for?
Well, I mean, it's like if I'm moving next week and I ask a couple of guys in my home group, would you help me move?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, whether they help or not, I'm moving.
Mm-hmm.
So am I asking, okay, God, help me get my way here, help me do this, or am I doing this in a change, from the change perspective? It's, I'm not debating here, but it's important for me to know what the hell I'm hoping. I check the box, I ask for God's help. But I'm asking God's help to do it my way. God, please help me, you know, get these morons to see that they'll all be happier if they just do Mike's will here. You know, that's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important I can delude myself that I'm somehow surrendered. Well, I asked God for help.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very clear on what I'm seeing on this. I don't have the patience in certain areas. So I'm not asking God to help me stay with somebody who just hit me. I'm not going to live in that circumstance where that might happen again. So I'm not going to do the work behind it. So that's why when I say that, I want to be real clear that I've not arrived. I've talked to many people who've had infidelity in their relationship, and they stayed. And I mean, God brought them to an amazing place. I know that's possible. I don't want to do it. See, you got to know what your limitations are here. And I knew Mike was going to say something. So, because he's the guy, we have spiritual consent, and he will be very clear. Charlie does not like when I talk about that. Because he said, Katie, all those things you could do to me and I'd stay. Well, good. You know? But like I said, I'm very clear that God will take us to an amazing spot with them if I surrendered. I also know me really well. And I just, you know, I don't, with the whole sexual stuff, I just don't have it. I don't have it. I'm scared if you cheated on me, I'm scared that you even have Instagram. You know what I mean? Oh, it could make me just cry. It's such a, I just watch so many people and so much pain behind all this stuff. And it's like, come on, man, I made a commitment to you. You make a commitment to me and do the work behind it so I don't have to keep doing the work behind it. I'm sick of doing the work behind it. Behind the whole sex and the whole deal. I'm sick of it. I've done it. I'm closer to God than I ever anticipated I could. And I don't know why, but I'm saying it probably because Mike's here with me. When my husband died, that did not bring me closer to God. Didn't make me angry. I was never angry at God because I get addiction. But when we had some sexual stuff going on in our relationship before we got married, that brought me closer to God than Joe's death, because it affected every cell of my being, of like, what are you doing, buddy? Come on. And all I could see is a racehorse here. And why would you know, because I was taking it all personal, don't get me wrong. And it took about 4 years to iron that shit out, okay? And in doing so, I got so close to God. I'm so grateful for it, but I'm not going through that again. I won't go through it again. So I hope I answered the question. Okay. Because I'm still not quite sure what you were asking me, Mike, but because I was not hearing a whole lot of it. Hey, did you see my body language? Okay, we got to wrap this stuff up. Okay. And you'll see me cry in a little while, too, when we get into 10 and 11, because they're just so special. It says, being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we keep close to him and perform his work well. In order to keep close to him, I got to get close to him. In order to get close to him, I got to get unblocked. See, I can hear the voice of God blocked, but not very clearly. It's like a bad cell service, right? And I always like to say, it says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, ask yourself, are you? Is that a fair question? Or do we have things like Candy Crush, binge watching TV? Oh my God. That is a heavy, heavy thing to do. Charlie and I try not to watch too much TV, but when we find a show, we're like, do another episode. Go on, do one more episode. Then I don't go to bed when I'm supposed to. Facebook. How many times do you look at your phone? What would happen at, Benjamin? What would happen if we turn to God as often as we look at our phone? You know, just turn, turn, turn. Oh, me too. Don't get me wrong. I'm by no means an angel in this area. As we discovered we could face life successfully, right? Can you? Are you? And no is a great answer. This is that we're just trying to be honest with ourselves. As we become conscious of his presence, this is the consciousness. We begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Thank you guys so much.